WNST, Tassel Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we're positively at Mako in Ocean City. Got the sign behind here. We're Podcast Row. I used to be a radio guy. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. 50th anniversary for the Maryland Lottery. 25th anniversary for us and our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Sending us on the road and keeping the windows up and down for my kitty cat as well. This guy's a defending champion. He's been back on the program. Last time I had you on that wasn't Zoomy or masked up or anything crazy, we were like pre-plague, having coffee and breakfast at State Fair with Don Mohler. We welcome Senator Chris Van Hollen back onto the program and talking all things Mako. This is quite the gathering. I didn't know what this was about until about 2 or 3 years ago. This is like the state Super Bowl, man, right? This is an amazing thing.
Well, Nestor, it's great to be with you. Give my best to Don. And look, this is kind of the Super Bowl of Maryland politics for a couple days each year. It's a little bit of a homecoming. You see a lot of people that you've worked with over the years, certainly during the pandemic where you only saw them on Zoom. You can see them. Also a chance to meet a lot of new people involved with government, but it's not just folks from government. It's people who are interested in policy issues throughout the state of Maryland. And they gather here, they have a little fun and do a lot of work, and it's time well spent.
Well, and it is. I mean, I there's a spirit about it. And, you know, maybe it's because my side of the fence is sitting in Annapolis now, you feel better about it. And Governor Moore came by. There is this a sense, I don't want to say bipartisan, because I'm not on the other side to know the difference, but there is a spirit down here that people are trying to make the state better. And I think we've all lived through the plague now, since the last time we got together, that it feels like things are getting better in our society, just in general.
I think in general that's true. I think, you know, sadly we are still incredibly and deeply polarized politically. And, of course, you just have to turn on your TV set these days to see that.
But
here in the state of Maryland, I think everybody is trying to row in the same direction, trying to get stuff done. And I was just at a town hall meeting organized by my friend and colleague Ben Cardin, and we were talking about how we do work very closely together with all parts of our state, Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, Baltimore, Washington suburbs, to try to deliver. And in the last 3 years in Congress, we did a lot of great stuff and a lot of things that are still in the pipeline that will help Maryland and the rest of the country.
So 3 years, it feels, you know, 2020, 2024, here we go. I have all the lists here from everything I talked to Senator Cardin about, probably same things that you, Inflation Reduction Act, science, chips, Baltimore Peninsula's role and all that. But I'm Baltimore positive in the city. You go to D.C. on behalf of the whole state, but there's such a focus on Baltimore and lifting Baltimore. The mayor was in the seat 5 minutes before you were here. Tell me about the commitment to Baltimore, because it does feel different with West being in Annapolis, different with Joe Biden being in Washington, and certainly different needs. I think everyone in the country understands that urban needs are real needs, and we have to invest in that.
I think everybody in Maryland recognizes that, you know, Baltimore remains sort of the beating and cultural heart and a key part of our economic livelihood for the rest of the state of Maryland. So if you don't have a healthy Baltimore, you don't have a healthy state of Maryland. So we have really focused on trying to invest resources in a number of critical areas in Baltimore. Public safety. Senator Carr and I just worked to get more U.S. attorneys' offices. It's something we've been working on for years. We're going to deliver, I think, 5 more U.S. attorneys, more folks for the ATF, more U.S. marshals. So across the board, when it comes to the federal partnership in Baltimore as part of the public safety effort, you're going to see a greater, even greater federal presence. And when it comes to economic development, you know, I find myself in Baltimore just about every week when we're not in session in Washington, announcing new investments that we're making to try to, you know, provide more job opportunities, and especially with young startup businesses.
Transportation and the Red Line and $1 billion that y'all went down there and got and brought back and was not used. Well, I'm sure that money's gone, 8.5 years removed. But this new pile of money, and how maybe had it been done 10 years ago, it would have been done differently than maybe it's being done now, or the confidence level that you have that 10 years from now, former Senator Van Hollen will be sitting here saying, we did it, and I got on the train, and we rode it, and people are taking it to jobs and schools, that is a vision that you you and Senator Cardin had a long time ago.
We did indeed. And before I mention the red line, and I do want to spend a moment on that, we've also gotten major investments in other parts of Baltimore's transportation structure. So Penn Station, getting a total facelift. It'll be a whole different place after
It was
the
always a
investment.
Period piece to go into. Yeah. It felt like a scene out of like a Hitchcock movie from the 50s.
But you know, it's still going to get a lot of this original character, but it's going to be some place that people want to spend
time.
Well,
come on now. You're a real senator. You go to New York for things. You've gotten out in Moynihan in New York at some point in the last couple of years, and we're like, well, this isn't Penn Station in New York anymore. I mean, new transport, you feel that, and you feel a sense of pride about that, that when you come into the city, you're like, oh, I'm in a place, right?
Exactly, and you know, you want to spend time there, and you want to, and that'll bring more development around that area. The BNP Tunnel, it's going to be renamed the Frederick Douglass Tunnel. This is going to reduce the train time, transit time from Union Station in D.C. to Penn Station to about half an hour. That is going to, I think, change things for the better in both places. It's going to be a lot more opportunities in Baltimore and more opportunities for people in the nation's capital. Red Line, as you said, the former governor kissed $1 billion in federal money goodbye when he shut down the Red Line, which had been a joint project by everyone else involved in politics in the state of Maryland and elected politics for a very long time, including my predecessor, Senator Mikulski, and then, of course, with Senator Cardin. So Senator Cardin and I got a provision into the infrastructure bill that said that projects that had previously been in line at the federal level do not have to go to the back of the line if a state wants to resuscitate it. It doesn't mean they necessarily get to go to the front of the line.
It's not a do-over.
No, it's not a do-over, but it says, okay, let's pick up where we left off in the process. Now, obviously, the alignment's going to have to be different. The people in Baltimore City will have to decide, you know, working with neighborhoods and with the state on that. But we are working, Senator Cardin and I, to try to make sure we do another run at federal funds so we get that money and more back for the next round. And I do want to thank Governor Moore for, you know, resuscitating this now that he's governor.
Well, I sat with Governor Hogan 2 years ago on the Crab Cake Tour, and you know, Don Mueller was with me and said, you know, upset, why'd you kill it? And he said, I ran on killing it. That's why I killed it. And I'm thinking, well, Wes ran on resuscitating, and here we are. Chris Van Hollen, our senator from Maryland here. CHIPS science, I think anyone during the plague, we realized if you needed a car part, if you needed all of these things, seems fundamental that we would make all the things we need and not turn things over and see made in Taiwan, made in China, made elsewhere. This is something that was long overdue and something that sort of drifted during our lifetime of, well, that's, they make that in Asia and we'll buy that and they can do it cheaper and labor and all those things. Onboarding this into the United States to make us more self-reliant, self-sufficient, this is a fundamental thing that I think comes out of the plague that maybe isn't such a bad thing.
This is a good thing. And look, we need more Made in America, and this is part of Made in America, and especially when it comes to these technologies that we rely on so deeply. You know, this semiconductor chips, it's all based on U.S. technology. A lot of the innovation done to develop these very advanced chips was done in the United States, but the manufacturing of these chips has gone offshore in many cases. And the CHIPS Act is an effort to onshore, to bring home the manufacturing of these really critical chips. Now, we also have many allies around the world who we can work with, and they also have a role in this process. But we do want to make sure that we're not reliant on, you know, countries like China, where you have increasing measures that they've taken to, you know, put themselves in an advantage economically through unfair trade practices. And during the pandemic, we also saw that when you have the supply chains disrupted, you know, you can't even get a car. Right? Because everything now relies on these chips in one form or another, right? Your dishwashers, your cars, advanced medical equipment, weaponry. So it's really important that we bring a lot of this manufacturing home.
Do you feel like we're getting more help internationally, maybe even in the aftermath of what happened on January 6th? And I know you and I have talked about that at length. You were clearly in the middle of that. But seeing, I don't want to say sympathy for the United States, but understanding the importance of the United States in regard to sovereignty, you know, wherever sovereignty is still breathed. Not China, clearly not Saudi Arabia, clearly not Russia and these places, but other places saying, wow, you know, America, wow, that came, we came close there. You know, that wasn't good, and we need to make America. So not just for us, but for other, for our allies that want to make us stronger.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I think countries around the world watched January 6th with an incredible amount of fear because, you know, the United States, while we're obviously not perfect, you know, we have been the model of democracy around the world, and to see a democracy attacked the way it was on January 6th absolutely sent a shockwave through other democracies around the world. I will say that in addition to, you know, trying to make sure we preserve democracy here at home as an example to others and support for others, what Joe Biden has done in terms of resuscitating the NATO alliance has been extraordinary because you had our former president who was essentially saying he was prepared to walk away from NATO. Now you have Putin invading Ukraine, and the reality is that our NATO partners are very grateful for the role that President Biden has played in bringing us together to fight Putin's aggression by supplying the people of Ukraine with what they need to defend their democracy.
I don't want to make it fresh for you because it's probably every... Are you pissed about January? Is there a moment? I mean, I'm pissed about it. And I see the people like you that were in the building at the time and watching it all transpire. I get pretty angry about it. And I can't imagine that you don't want justice to be served in that way. That if somebody, when somebody does something to put you personally in harm's way with a lie, that you want to see justice. I think Americans, good Americans, want to see justice served.
I think Americans want to see justice served. I mean, this was a direct attack on the Capitol, and yes, I was there. It was a direct attack on the people whose job it is to defend the Capitol, and we saw the Capitol Police, you know, doing everything they could, but you saw the mobs, you know, picking up, you know, sticks and other things to batter them, to spray them. We had our, you know, D.C. National Guard came in, and they were there, but again, you know, you had people trying to attack them. So we do need justice, right? You've got a lot of, you know, folks who need to be held accountable for what they did. It's one thing to engage in a peaceful process. It's another thing altogether to engage in mob violence against the Capitol for the purpose of overturning the election, right? We have to go back to why it was January 6th. It was January 6th because they were counting the ballots from the Electoral College. And so this was aimed directly at disrupting the democratic process and the transition, the peaceful transition of power to the next president. So, yes, these were insurrectionists, and they do need to be held accountable. And, of course, the person who orchestrated the whole thing was the former president, Donald Trump, and now he's under indictment in multiple places.
Screaming about the FBI out to get him, I know you've done a lot to... The people in the FBI, the people who serve the FBI for generations through transitions, presidents, Democrat, Republican, going back to Reagan and Clinton, and the thought that that we would try to undermine what that stands for, that, and I know that that's something that you've worked on in the Senate as well.
Yeah, look, this gets me really angry. You know, our Republican colleagues who say they want to stand up for law enforcement are now threatening to defund the FBI, to defund federal law enforcement. And it is a sign of just how lost they have become that they're trying to, you know, take out their political disagreements with, you know, certain individuals by essentially defunding the men and women of the FBI. So we, at the same time this is going on, we in Maryland are working very hard to bring a new FBI headquarters to the state of Maryland. As you know, there are two sites in Prince George's County, Maryland, one in Virginia. The ones in Maryland will both save the taxpayer dollars a lot of money, over $1 billion compared to Virginia. There are a variety of reasons for that. Also, Prince George's County, Maryland, has been, you know, left behind when it comes to the Washington area, when it comes to these very important federal office buildings and functions. So for many reasons, the FBI belongs in Maryland. We're going to keep fighting for it. It's ironic that we're fighting to do that at the same time Republicans are trying to defund the FBI.
Well, it's interesting being a Marylander. I don't really think so much about those federal agencies like Social Security in West Baltimore, or just driving to the Capitol Center all my life down the freeway and seeing NSA and, you know, these federal things that, Maryland being close to D.C., it's the benefit as long as it's not in Virginia, right?
You know, they say,
unless it's the football team.
Right. So, you know, they say in real estate, location, location, location.
Right.
There's no doubt Maryland has benefited from its proximity to the nation's capital when it comes to major federal investments. I mean, those include the ones you mentioned. It includes the National Institutes of Health. It includes the FDA. But Prince George's County, despite its, you know, the fact that it borders on the District of Columbia, has really not gotten its fair share of these major federal office investments. Parts of Virginia have done very well. Parts of Maryland have done very well. But this is why we think it's important to make sure that we include Prince George's County when we're making these large federal investments.
Our Senator Chris Van Hollen here, courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation. We're at Mako in Ocean City. It's been a little while since Senator and I have gotten together. Not that we didn't have inflation the last time we got together. We always do. Buying a house, 7%, you know, all of this going on. Y'all went down there and said, we got to, you know, Joe Biden didn't want this on his record. Was left over from the plague and all the other issues we've had, the war in Russia. Inflation Reduction Act. Give me the schoolhouse rock on that, Senator.
So, look, the Inflation Reduction Act is really designed to target two areas and lower costs in two areas. The first is in healthcare broadly and specifically within the area of prescription drugs. In the Inflation Reduction Act, we wanted to essentially lower the cost of prescription drugs across the board. Unfortunately, we were not able to get the votes to do that on a super broad basis, but we did take a very important first step when it comes to the Medicare program. So the Medicare program has been prohibited by law from negotiating drug prices with Big Pharma.
Boy, that sounds like a fix.
Fix it is, right?
Right?
No,
I mean,
so Big Pharma had written into federal law the fact that Medicare could not negotiate on behalf of all its members for lower drug prices. So the taxpayer got screwed, American taxpayer, and seniors had to pay more. So finally, we've given the Medicare program the authority to negotiate lower drug prices. We also capped insulin for folks on Medicare.
Thank you. My wife is diabetic. Thank you very much. My wife needs insulin the rest of her life to live.
Yeah, and now, but
keeps her awake at night.
But Nestor, now we've got to do.
You know?
We have to do this across the board beyond the Medicare program. But this was a very important first step. The other thing is a major investment in clean energy. You know, we're here in Ocean City. Maryland is going to become a huge offshore capital for the country, and a lot of the turbines are going to be manufactured at Sparrow's Point, the old Sparrow's Point, old Bethlehem
Steel. That's where my dad worked. Come on now,
right
you
there.
Know that.
So this is a great moment where you're going to see clean energy generating manufacturing jobs down at Sparrow's Point, now Trade Point Atlantic, and going to generate 10,000 good-paying jobs.
And we're eat crab cakes at Costas after work.
There you go. So, you know, what's not to like about this? And I will say that that Maryland offshore wind is going to be made possible by the tax incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act. And that act also includes other stuff that's going to help homeowners. I worked very hard on a bill that I included in it. So if you want to make your home more energy efficient, you can save over $700 a year on average. The big impediment for people getting their home more energy efficient are the upfront costs, right? You got to put in insulation. You may have to bring in higher-end, heating system, air conditioning system, higher efficiency.
New windows from Window Nation?
Right. Okay.
There you go. All right.
Okay.
You like that?
And windows from Window. Right. So my point is that upfront cost is a big disincentive for some people. So we're going to provide upfront grants, rebates to individual homeowners to help cover those costs, and then they'll be able to do it and save even more money over time.
Well, home ownership's the heart of the American dream, right? Literally, right?
It is indeed, and what we're trying to do is make sure that, you know, people can have their homes, have healthy homes, and also have the benefits of energy efficiency so they don't have to pay huge electric bills.
All right. I don't want to get overtly political, but you're always running for office. Everyone, you know, it's a part of being here. Senator Cardin came by. the landscape of the state and the responsibility of, if West does a good job, if you guys do a good, that this will stay Democratic to some degree. I'm down. I've had more Republicans than Democrats on the show this week, believe it or not, being down here on the Eastern Shore and other places. And I do like hearing, you know, what J.B. Jennings said to me last night, or what, you know, Cornbread stopped by here, Carl Anderson. So hearing the other side and trying to figure out where the end of Trumpism is and where the last election, and I saw Kelly Schultz the other night as well, and I saw Barry Glassman as well, and, I saw Brooke Learman. What we saw in this state, trending purpley, trending red with a red governor in a blue state for 8 years, the future in the next couple of years. I mean, it's incumbent upon all of the Democrats to do a good job to make sure that whatever Senator Cardin's going to go, he told me he's going to enjoy himself, but whoever your counterpart could be at that point, that it's a party race at this point, right? Literally.
Well, yeah. Let me just say, Nestor, as you said, we're here in Ocean City, and there are lots of areas where we work closely with our fellow Republicans in the state of Maryland to advance our issues that are important to our state. And we do that on Capitol Hill when it comes to issues that are important to Maryland. I don't know if you've been talking about blue catfish on your show recently, but
I have at length talked about this.
So you know, blue catfish, that brings the reds and the blues together in terms of Democrats and Republicans.
Because we all drink the same water, and eat the same crabs.
There we go. So look, there are a lot of things that we are working on together in the state of Maryland. But there have been big differences over time. Look, we talked about the red line from Baltimore, right? I mean, the previous governor pulled the plug on that and $1 billion. And it's not just $1 billion. It's connecting people with the ability to get to work on time, to get to the neighborhoods they need to be in, to see people they need to see, and do it in an affordable way. So, look, yes, Democrats have to deliver. One of the things Ben Cardin and I have been very focused on is trying to make sure that the benefits of these major federal investments, infrastructure bill, CHIPS and Science Act, Inflation Reduction Act, that Marylanders will benefit. And they are. As we're talking about here in Mako, people are coming up to me, Republicans and Democrats, they all are benefiting from the investments
Democrat
that we're
money
making.
That you're bringing back from Washington.
Exactly.
It's American money.
Right. And, you know, the wild thing about this, like the Inflation Reduction Act, we a lot of this stuff we did pass on a bipartisan basis, in Washington even. The Inflation Reduction Act, we did not. We did not have single Republican support. And yet, if you're watching these investments in clean energy around the country, a lot of them are going to red states. And they're not turning back the money, Nestor. They're not
right.
They're not saying, no, take your,
that money,
no
West Virginia,
take your clean energy and go
right,
home.
Right,
they
exactly.
say the more, the better for all of us. So, look, this is, I think, what you know delivering looks like. And the reality is that the economy is doing very well. Yes, inflation was running very high. Inflation is now coming down. It was 9%. It's now about 3%. We need to get it lower, but it's heading in the right direction. Unemployment is at a 50-year low. People are now seeing real wages going up, meaning their pay is going up faster than inflation, so they're pocketing more money in real terms. We got to keep it going. You know, it doesn't just happen by accident. And so these policies, in my view, are working. We've worked very closely with Joe Biden to get it done. But you're right. We got to keep delivering. It's always, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow, not what happened yesterday.
I got to ask you this sort of flippantly, but, you know, I'm wearing orange and I'm an Oriole guy and you're down in Kensington and you could have mixed emotions about baseball. Is there any chance in the world that the Baltimore Orioles or any sports owner could get federal money to...
Hey, look, you know, first of all, go O's. I'm a huge O's fan.
Go for it.
I even had the chance to throw out the first pitch a couple years ago.
How'd you do?
You know what? You can check the video, man. Maybe it was luck, but it went right over the plate. I actually, in Little League, I did play.
Well,
I was a pitcher in Little League, but it was a long time ago. You know, when you're throwing out a ball in the Fort Orioles game,
I can't throw a party
anymore. You do go in the backyard and try and, you know, get
the... Did you do it from the mound or below the mound? What'd you do?
They wouldn't let me from the mound.
Because you're afraid you're embarrassed. Everybody says you throw from the mound, you'll screw it up.
Anyway,
like,
who knows? But... look, I mean, the O's are having a really good season. Very, you know, proud of them. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of discussion now around development in Oriole Stadium and Camden Yards. The state legislature is obviously working on that piece.
Well, there's 600 million sitting there. All you have to do is talk to them and sign.
I'm talking to my colleagues about that. So, But you know, look, we got a great team in the Orioles, and you know, I know they're going to.
Well, that would be a heck of a project to think that federal money would come for this.
Yeah, no. So in terms of federal money, I don't know of any federal monies that are coming.
Fair enough. On the record, I need to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Crab cakes. Is there a good crab cake in Montgomery County?
I thought we're going to Coco's, right?
We are going to Coco's. He comes in, he knows you want a crab cake. Even the guys in the D.C. suburbs know you got to come up the Beltway for that, you know. So we'll get you to Coco's.
Good.
Always appreciation for your time, Senator. Thanks for coming
by. Good to be with you.
You're always in good spirits when you come by, and you're very patient with me.
No.
I used to just talk about sports for a
living. We're talking pretty fast, and we don't even have coffee this time. What's going on?
Card gives me a hard time, but that's kind of Royal Farms. I'm Royal Farms sponsored, so they fire me up with the coffee.
I did stop at Royal Farms to pick up my coffee on the way to Berlin, Maryland. Have you been to Berlin?
I have been through Berlin.
It's a great town. I was there. It was the fire station. Speaking of federal investments, we got $400,000 to help them get a new set of what they're called air packs. Like when you go into a fire and the building's filled with smoke, you obviously need to have an air pack on you. And so theirs were, you know, some of them were as old as 30 years old, but we just got $400,000 for the Berlin Fire Department, so help them out. Thank them, really, for what they do to help and protect all of us.
Well, I had Cornbread Carl Anderton, the Honorable, on the show, and we were talking about how you could possibly get a bad piece of chicken at Royal Farms on 50 between, like, Cambridge and Ocean City when, you know, like, you're just driving past the Purdue plant, and you're thinking, man, I want some chicken, and there just happens to be a Royal Farms there, so.
There's a lot of chicken on the Eastern Shore,
well,
no doubt about it.
Gassing up. is our Senator, Chris Van Hollen, joining us here. We're at Mako in Ocean City. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation. We're back for more from the beach, although I haven't seen the sand yet in Ocean City. Stay with us at Baltimore Positive.